Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Last week, North Carolina Senior Senator Richard Burr stepped down as chairman of the powerful Senate Intelligence Committee after the FBI seized his cell phone as part of an investigation into allegations of possible insider trading. Despite painting a rosy public picture of our preparedness for the coronavirus epidemic, behind the scenes, the senator was telling donors things were going to get bad. But Burr's troubles stem from allegations that he acted on that opinion and sold up to $1.7 million worth of stock just prior to a stock market correction that was in reaction to the COVID-19 outbreak. Senator Burr has said that his stock trades were based on publicly available information and called for an ethics committee investigation. But lawmakers are privy to a lot of sensitive information that can lead to ups and downs in our economy, and the FBI launched its investigation to determine if Burr benefited from that knowledge. Robert Fattorecci is the Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter who broke the story for ProPublica, and he joins us for the hour. Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Terry Galosh worked on Capitol Hill for years and played key roles in helping to craft important pieces of legislation, including the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge or STOCK Act of 2012. That's the law prohibiting members of Congress from engaging in what is essentially insider trading. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
So, Robert, let me begin with you. I believe you first reported this story on March 19th, about 3 days after the stock market experienced the worst one-day sell-off since 1929. It was just about a month after Senator Burr sold off what you describe as, quote, a significant percentage of his stocks. How did you uncover this?
So it was pretty simple. I saw in the NPR story that you just cited, that found, you know, had a recording of Senator Burr talking to a members-only club about how bad he thought the coronavirus impact was going to be on American society, school closures, disruption of business travel. And this was obviously, you know, around the same time he had authored an op-ed with another senator telling the general public that the U.S.'s preparedness for coronavirus was quite good, that this is something they had, you know, prepared for years, this kind of epidemic. So I saw those two juxtaposed together, and I cover money in politics, and my first thought was, if he was aware of something that he wasn't telling the general public, I wonder if he also acted on it to benefit his own financial interests. So I just went straight to the website where you can see financial disclosures and financial transactions by members of Congress. I looked up his name. I brought up the most recent form, and my jaw just dropped. The number of trades, the dollar amount of these trades, you know, I probably looked at thousands of these forms before, and I don't think I'd ever seen one like this one.
You reported that he unloaded between $628,000 and $1.72 million of his holdings on February the 13th in 33 separate transactions. And we've been talking about this on this and other programs for the last week or so. And I've always wondered why the spread. That's a million-dollar spread in terms of how much he traded. Why have we not been able to hit a definite figure?
So unfortunately, lawmakers are only required to report each of these transactions in ranges. So, you know, in this case, we had, you know, almost three dozen sales. So for each of those, we have a range. So we add up all the low-end ranges and all the high-end ranges, and that's the number we end up with. And unless the senator or, you know, member of the House decides to voluntarily give us a more precise number, that's what we're left with.
Tyler, among the things that you did while you were in Washington working with members of Congress, you were on a team that crafted, as I said, what is essentially the bill that outlaws members of Congress to act in their own financial self-interest based on knowledge they glean from their positions in Congress. What led to the Stock Act of 2012? Why was it written? Why did Congress feel the need to write it?
Well, it's a really good question. So first, the law of insider trading applies to everyone equally. So there is a long-standing prohibition under the federal securities laws that says you can't trade while in possession of material non-public information, that you have a duty to the source of that information. And so that law, longstanding law, says if you're a corporate executive, for example, you learn information about the company. You learn it because you have a duty to the company to serve the company's best interests. You can't then misappropriate. You can't take that information for yourself and use it to your own benefit. With members of Congress, they learn an awful lot of information, and their staffs learn an awful lot of information about crises as they're going to happen. Companies come in and ask for bailouts. They know before almost anyone else knows when there's problems in the economy, problems with other countries, potential warfare, problems with sanctions. They learn an awful lot about what's going on. In the last financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, it turns out that a number of members of Congress, while they knew what was going on in the financial markets, and were engaged in trying to bail out the financial markets and knew the government efforts to try to bail out the financial markets, were also trading an awful lot of stock themselves. And when the public learned about that in a 60 Minutes piece in November of 2011, there was an immediate reaction by the public that said, "Oh my God, these guys are taking advantage of this information while we're struggling." And members of Congress quickly reacted and said, "We have to do something. We have to make it clear that the law applies to us too." And so what we did was drafted a law that says any information that a member of Congress gains that's either derived from or gained in the performance of their duty as a member of Congress, that's material and non-public, they have a duty to not trade on that. So that's what the law does. So it makes it very, very clear that they have a duty. So even though they're just being told information by a government agency, or they're just being told voluntarily information by a company that may be in trouble, they still have a duty to not trade on it.
So, if a member of under this law, and under the previous law, which covers everybody in the country, actually, under this law, if a member of Congress discovers a piece of information that might be against his or her financial self-interest, they just have to suck it up and go with the flow? Or are there ways to not lose that money, but also not break the law?
Yeah, that's a really good question. This is part of the challenge. They actually have to suck it up. This is one of the obligations that they have. And so, when they take the oath of office, they say that they're going to faithfully discharge the duties of the office. And that duty is very clearly and now statutorily a duty to the American citizens. It's a duty to Congress. It's a duty to government to not trade while in possession of that. And so they, in fact, cannot take advantage of that information. And that's part of the problem, right? Because you can imagine that temptation is huge. It is huge. And it's unavoidable the minute that they have these types of holdings.
So before you wrote your story, Robert Fetterecci, NPR obtained this recording from late February in which Senator Burr told a VIP group at a social club about what he thought was going to be the economic impact of COVID-19 and that it would be far worse than what he had been saying publicly and that what most of the general public had been told by federal officials. Is that the smoking gun here? Is that an indication that whatever happened with his stock trades, it came from that inside knowledge that he shared with high-dollar donors?
So, I mean, I'm not a federal prosecutor, but in my opinion, I don't think that's a smoking gun. I think what a smoking gun would be maybe text messages between him and his investment professional, or text messages between him and any relatives about these stock trades and what motivated them. For example, a story we broke, I don't know, maybe a week and a half ago, was that on the very same day that Senator Burr had his massive sell-off, his brother-in-law did as well. His brother-in-law is, you know, serves on some federal board, so he's also required to disclose his stock trades. You know, and that's a really big coincidence, right? I wonder, was there any communication between the two? The FBI has now seized Senator Burr's phone. Are there any text messages between the two? Is Senator Burr discussing anything he learned as a senator and connecting that to the idea of, hey, you know, I need to sell my stocks off. You should too. I mean, this is obviously all speculation. I don't know that they communicated, but that's a question that could possibly be answered now.
Under the Securities Exchange Commission law that governs us all with regard to insider trading, and then under this law that you helped craft, Tyler, the Stock Act of 2012, would it be against the law for a senator to share information that he knew with somebody else and then for them to act on that information by trading stock as a result of it?
Absolutely. So the interesting thing about insider trading is that it prohibits not just the person who first receives the information from trading, but they call it tipper and tippee liability. So anybody that they tell about that material non-public information, anything they do with it is also subject to liability. So not only do we have an instance here or a fact pattern that could suggest that Senator Burr may have liability, anyone else he told, that could be a family member, that could also be a room full of donors.
So when he said, Robert reported that he told members of the Capitol Hill Club that the virus was, quote, much more aggressive in its transmission than anything that we've seen in recent history. And he warned that companies might have to curtail their employees' travel, that schools could close, and the military might be mobilized to compensate for overwhelmed hospitals. If anybody in that room took that information and thought, oh my God, I have to trade some stock here, and did it, they would be in violation. That would be correct?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, so had we heard that information, Robert, from anybody else, anywhere else, prior to Senator Burr telling that group of people?
Are you asking me if
yes.
there were any similar warnings publicly
yes.
at that time?
Yes.
Gosh, I don't know. I'd be surprised if there weren't any. I mean, obviously there were public figures who took this threat more seriously earlier than most. I don't know specifically who, but I'm sure they're out there.
Tyler.
Yeah. So I think there's an interest. This raises a really important question about members of Congress in particular and government officials in particular. So if I hear information because it's my friend or my aunt on a Facebook page, it goes into a bucket of levels of seriousness and how much I trust that information. If I read about it in a newspaper, it may be a slightly higher or different level of trust in that information. If I have a senior member and chairman of an intelligence committee of the United States Senate telling me something based on I don't know what, but maybe because they have more information than anybody else that I am aware of might, I might give that an even different level of trust. So when we think about whether or not it's material non-public or whether or not it's that information can be traded upon, that's one thing we have to focus on.
Tyler Galosh helped craft the Stock Act of 2012. He joins us along with Robert Fattorecci, the reporter for ProPublica who broke the story about Richard Burr. We'll continue in a moment in Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Robert Fattorecci, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for ProPublica, who broke the story about Senator Richard Burr's stock trades in the shadow of COVID-19. Tyler Galosh is also with us. He is the executive director of Healthy Markets Association, which is an investor-focused trade group. He's constantly in D.C. testifying, but before that, he was working in D.C., and he helped craft a number of pieces of legislation, including including the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act, the Stock Act of 2012. And Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, as I understand it, that we've been talking about, members of Congress are required to disclose securities transactions. Is that because of the Stock Act of 2012, or is that simply because of the Securities and Exchange Commission Act that covers us all?
No, it is not part of the Securities and Exchange Act. It is part of separate law, including the Stock Act.
So is the president or the vice president or members of Congress, are they covered under that or a similar piece of legislation?
Yes. So executive branch officials, as well as members of Congress, each have their own sort of reporting obligations. So we can see what they're doing in securities trading. As Robert, I think, has pointed out, it's not as specific of information as you might appreciate and can give you huge variations of what they're doing.
So prior to the passage of the Stock Act of 2012, was it a free-for-all? Have things improved since the act was passed? Are we getting a more honest Congress out of this?
Well, you can never tell what it was like before. You can only speculate in terms of recognizing when there is less transparency. You know, you have to assume that human nature may unfortunately kick in. So I'd like to think that with the passage of the law and improved disclosures about their trading activities, that we are now starting to have a better handle, and that members of Congress are, for lack of a better phrase, behaving themselves better. Obviously, stories like this undercut that. One of the things I think we really have to focus on with members of Congress is they learn a lot of the information that they learn that is really important and really valuable is information just like this, where it's this disease or this pandemic is really bad, or this is a credible terrorist threat, or this country's trade agreement is not going, the negotiations are not going very well. And those impact individual companies and industries very specifically. And the reason why these members have that information is because they can change the outcomes. And so it's not just that they receive information, they also make information. A senator giving a speech can move the stock market. And so we have to recognize that they have a very dynamic role in not just possession, but also creating this information that moves markets.
And that's what you reported on, Robert, that Senator Burr's trades, in this case at least, involved companies that were among the most vulnerable to some kind of an economic slowdown in the face of a pandemic, like stocks within the hospitality industry. But just to give him the benefit of the doubt, he did have this knowledge. Could it just be prudent in the face of a possible outbreak of something that you'd want to get out of the hospitality industry stock in any viral pandemic, even if it didn't turn out to be this serious? Or would this necessarily be indicative of acting on insider knowledge?
The answer is we don't know yet, right? I mean, what his public explanation has been is that this massive sell-off that was a huge portion of his overall net worth all in one day was not informed by anything he learned as a senator, but by reports he watched on TV, on CNBC.
Yes, he's constantly said it came from publicly available information.
Right. But I mean, as Tyler has very articulately said numerous times on numerous platforms, I mean, if you're chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, if you're a member of the Health Committee, if you're the father of the bill that created the agency within HHS that's responsible for pandemics, how do you separate what you learn as a senator and what you're watching on CNBC when you make these trades? And one thing that I should know, you know, we've talked a lot about the Stock Act. Senator Burr was actually one of only three senators who voted against that bill at the time. And when former HHS Secretary Tom Price was facing his own allegations of insider trading, noticed this recently, Senator Burr was one of the most prominent defenders of his securities trading, which I thought was interesting in retrospect.
Yeah, he called it ludicrous and insane. He called that bill ludicrous and insane before it came up before Congress. And he said that the bill was redundant, essentially, because insider trading laws that were already on the books already applied to members of Congress. So Martha Stewart went to jail for insider trading, acting on a stock tip. Why wouldn't Congress be covered by the same law that put her in jail for a time period, Tyler?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And the answer is they are. But there's always a really big caveat. And the really big caveat before the passage of the Stock Act was this. When Martha Stewart learns information about a company that isn't public, again, she learns it from an executive. And because of that, there was a duty. The company had this information. It shares it with an executive. It goes to Martha Stewart. And that there's a chain of obligation that says you have this, you're entrusted with this information, you can't misuse it. When you're a member of Congress and it's all sorts of information that you get every day, they don't know when they're receiving it, whether or not it's material or whether or not it's public or non-public. Most of the time when members of Congress receive information, it just comes in and they do not necessarily even assess what's out in the world versus what they're getting from a particular source. That's different if they know it's a classified intelligence briefing or something else, but generally speaking, all that comes in. The question was always, do they have a duty to the source of that information when they receive it? And that was something that was ambiguous in the law that is no longer ambiguous because of the Stock Act. So Senator Burr is in some ways correct. The law always did apply to members of Congress. The problem really was, did they have a duty to not trade or take advantage of that information before? And now we made it the statutory obligation that, yes, they have that duty, and it is the duty to Congress and the American citizens to know.
But there does remain a little ambiguity, maybe not in that area, but in a certain area, because as Senator Burr has said, he made these trades based on what he heard on while watching CNBC reporting out of Asia about what was going on in China and elsewhere. And if I had watched that and I had stock in the hospitality industry or I had stock in biotech companies, I might think I need to call my broker and make some trades. There's no way to prove that that's not the case. Is there, Robert, or Tyler, who wants to take this? Tyler, go ahead.
Well, I'll start with the law. So the law says trading while in possession of material. The law is about trading while in possession of material non-public information. It is always the case that insider traders, when accused, attempt to defend themselves by saying, but usually because the transactions happen, those are observable. So what they usually say is, I wasn't trading because I knew that. I was trading because I knew something else that was also very important and told me that I should trade this way. Always the defense. And, you know, frankly, might even be true. What's interesting, though, is the law doesn't make you have to distinguish exactly why you traded. A court doesn't have to prove that you traded because of this information versus that information. All it has to show is you had material non-public information, and it was clearly something that you knew at the time you made the trade, and it's irrelevant as to whether or not the real reason in your head at the time you made it was because of something that was public.
So Robert Federici, I know that you're not a lawyer. You are a journalist and you're not an investigator. You're an investigative journalist. So what will the FBI and the Justice Department be looking at? How will they sort through what you have reported on, what may be in the senator's phone or may not be in the senator's phone, and his claim that he acted on this because of a CNBC tip? How will they figure this out? What's the process?
Well, they can look at text messages, right? They can look at who he was calling around that time. They can then interview people he was calling around that time. So, for example, you know, the story about his brother-in-law selling off big the same day that Senator Burr did. As we were developing that story, it immediately struck me that this is a new front for the FBI, for the FBI's investigation. They now have a person who is not Senator Burr, who they can go talk to and ask about what Senator Burr's mindset, knowledge, and motivations were at the time of the sales, potentially. There may be other opportunities like that that arise from evidence they find on his phone by looking, again, at who he was talking to, who he was texting with. I don't know if they'll have access to his emails, but if they do, what's in his emails as well. So essentially, it just widens the network. They don't have to solely depend on what Senator Burr is saying was in his brain at the time. They will have other sources of information.
Tyler.
Yeah, they also need to find out what information Senator Burr had. And this is going to be somewhat challenging. So if we're talking about a senator trading while in possession of material non-public information derived from their job, we need to know what that was. And so that is something that we're going to have to figure out what was in a Senate briefing. We're going to have to figure out the contents of the briefing. We'd also want to figure out not just that briefing, but conversations they may have had in the hallways, information that they may have received from constituents, information that they may have received from other sources. I think it's way too narrow of a scope to say we're only going to look at what was learned from a singular briefing while ignoring the rest of the information that comes to a senator all day.
And you told, Tyler, you told ProPublica that every single day, members of Congress and their staffs learn a ton of information, both public and non-public. It's generally impossible for any member of Congress to even know what information they obtain as part of their jobs is material, non-public information versus how much is public information, and that it's rare that they are told that the information they have is material, non-public information. Is that the senator's out?
Well, it's a really, no. The short answer is really no. And the challenge here is that's not a, it's not actually a defense under the securities laws. And it's also not a defense under ethics. And it's not a defense, frankly, in the court of public opinion. So let's start with the defense of I wasn't trading because I knew this other material non-public information from my job. I was trading because of this public information that I may have watched on CNBC in Asia or something else, or researching obscure fertilizer company stocks at someplace else. So at face value, you can say the law does not care which of those two things you were relying upon. If you even had the information, it's presumed that that was part of it. So first, you can still be found guilty even if he says, look, that was 0% of the reason why I traded while in possession of this information was because of it.
The other gray area, and it seems to be something that's very difficult to prove one way or the other, Robert, is the fact that senators are on these committees, and he was the head of the, until he stepped down, the Intelligence Committee, which is a lot of the information they receive is classified. We don't know it. You don't know it. We don't have a right to know it, but they know it. So if they act on something that is classified, how would we know that they have broken the law?
I think that's, I mean, that's definitely been one of the challenges for my reporting. And it's also going to be one of the challenges for the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office. Piercing that is going to be difficult. And, you know, I don't know all the statutes, but there are protections that I think Tyler could speak on that prevent law enforcement, or at least make it more difficult for law enforcement to penetrate that.
That's exactly right. Congress takes its prerogatives in the speech and debate clause of the Constitution very, very seriously. And senators, particularly those who are receiving intelligence briefings and classified briefings, not just Senator Burr, but frankly, those on the other side of the aisle and as well as his colleagues, are going to take protecting that information very, very seriously. And so this learning what is contained in those types of briefings is essential to this case. It's essential determining what's material non-public information that they may have had, but it's also going to be very, very, very hard for investigators to learn what exactly that was.
And how much more difficult would this be to prove today than it was even in 2012, given the plethora of sources of information that are out there, from websites to tweet streams to other places that people get their news, whether it's real news or conspiracy theories. How would you be able to pin that down? Maybe he heard this on a tweet that no, it's not even on his phone.
So the interesting thing is that, again, that's irrelevant. So he may have had 100 different pieces of public information that he was using to make this decision. But if the 101st piece of information that he had was something that was from the government, he broke the law. That's the issue. So the other part I think we want to go back to is the reason why there's so much interest in this, why your listeners care so much, why this story that Robert broke is so resonated with the public, is that when we send members of Congress to Congress, we elect them to represent us. We want them focused on us. And as this crisis was unfolding, by his own account, Senator Burr was spending a ton of time following Asian CNBC reports and researching obscure stocks and thinking about what the pandemic trends were for his personal portfolio transactions, and not focused on things like restoring our economy and keeping people alive. I mean, at the break a moment ago, we noted, I heard that the NC Department of Transportation is furloughing thousands of employees. At the same time, there's more demand than ever in North Carolina for their work. Senator Burr should be focused on that, and instead, by his own admission, he's focused on CNBC reports out of Asia.
And the other aspect of that's a very important point that you make. But Robert, the other aspect from a reporter's point of view would be also that he knew that this, or he really had strong feelings that this was going to be a much worse situation than was being painted by other members of the government. How is that a story?
Of course. I mean, you know, why did his stark warning only come in the form of a talk he gave to a exclusive members-only club, right? Why was that? Why were those warnings not in the op-ed he wrote for FoxNews.com? Why were they not made in speeches on the Senate floor? They weren't, and that's not a question Senator Burr is answering.
Robert Fattoretti is the man who brought the reporter who broke the story for ProPublica about the alleged stock trades the senator made, Senator Burr made. And Tyler Galosh is with us, the fellow who helped write the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Senator Richard Burr's alleged insider trading, at least allegations of insider trading by Richard Burr, trading stock on the basis of what he knew about the COVID-19 outbreak. Tyler Galosh is one of the people who have crafted the Stock Act of 2012, which prohibits members of Congress acting financially on information they gain in their duties. He's also a financial services policy professional and lawyer and executive director of the Healthy Markets Association. Robert Fattoretti is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who broke this story in ProPublica. Prior to the FBI investigation being announced, Robert, Senator Burr himself called for a Senate investigation, a Senate Ethics Committee investigation into his into the allegations of his trading. Is that the act of someone who is guilty?
I'm not going to say whether it's the act of someone who's guilty or not, but I will tell you there are plenty of ethics experts in Washington who don't have the highest opinion of Senate ethics investigations. They believe that they're too deferential to members. They believe they move too slowly, that they aren't transparent enough, and they too rarely take action against members. That by no means is that to say that there have not been impactful investigations that committee has done. Frankly, it could have also been obvious to Senator Burr that there would be calls for that kind of investigation anyway. But of course, it was a step toward getting an independent body, a semi-independent body, to scrutinize his activity. So, yeah, I agree with you. It was not a total stonewalling by any means.
Other lawmakers, we haven't talked about them, and I know you haven't reported on them, so you don't know a great deal about them, but other lawmakers, including Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe, Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler, both Republicans, and California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, were involved in similar trades. Feinstein's husband sold more than $1 million in stock in a biotech firm prior to our finding out about how bad this was going to be. Loeffler, whose husband is the CEO of the company that owns the New York Stock Exchange, made an $18.7 million worth of trades, including selling ExxonMobil. We know what's happened to oil prices. And including buying Citrix, which is a company that owns, I think, WebEx, among other things, or GoToMeeting software, which is being abundantly used by people all over the country right now. Will they find themselves under similar investigations? Robert.
Well, we do know that there has been some law enforcement scrutiny in all of these cases, or I don't know about all of these cases, but Senator Loeffler, she has turned over documents to federal authorities. Senator Feinstein, I believe her representatives have answered some basic questions from federal authorities. So by no means is Senator Burr the only one receiving federal law enforcement scrutiny. That said, far and away, it seems like he is receiving the most intense scrutiny. The fact that there was a search warrant, the fact that they seized a phone at his home, that hasn't been, we haven't seen anything like that with any of the other members of Congress.
How much of that do you think has to do with the fact that this investigation is being conducted by the FBI and the Bill Barr Justice Department? Richard Burr's committee in Congress, the one that he chaired until last week, the Intelligence Committee, was one of the committees investigating Russia's involvement in the 2016 election, and he did not let go of it just because the president would like him to. How much of this could be retribution?
So without a doubt, we have seen this administration politicize the DOJ, or at least attempt to. More than we have in most previous administrations. There have been actions that they've taken that have made people wonder. So I certainly think that, unfortunately, it's a fair question to ask. I haven't seen any evidence yet that that's what's happening in this case. As a reporter, if we were to see evidence that it was happening in this case, we'd be very eager to report it. But right now, that's pure speculation, right? And based on Senator Burr's actions, I don't think it's necessarily surprising that there's an aggressive investigation.
Tyler.
Yeah, so I think it's a disappointing question to have to ask, because I do agree that it's a fair one. But I'd like to remind your listeners that the Department of Justice and the SEC have career investigative staffs who generally are on the focus of, identifying and prosecuting or bringing actions for violations of law. And that's what they focus on. And I think when we think about other members, each individual whose name has been brought up, the circumstances and the facts are very different. Did they have Dianne Feinstein has her husband is a financial services professional who buys and sells stock and ownership interests all of the time. Is there a risk there? Absolutely. Is that it? But is it a different bucket or a different set of facts than Kelly Loeffler, than Inhofe, and certainly than Senator Burr? Absolutely. But I think when we think about each of these investigations, we really try to think about the very specific facts of each one. And I think here, Senator Burr's reported activities, what we know so far, thanks to Robert's reporting and others, is of a nature significantly different. I will point out, however, that also merely having a third-party advisor managing his money also wouldn't necessarily get him out of trouble here either. And I know that's something that has come up with Senator Loeffler, for example.
Yeah, she says that she doesn't make her own decisions, that they're made by a third party, sometimes multiple third parties, which is completely believable because most of us who have any kind of investments leave it up to somebody else.
Well, that's right. And frankly, her husband may be one of the an incredibly informed financial services professional. And I would expect she and her husband would hire incredibly competent financial services professionals. But here's the question. If in her instance, if she has a conversation with her husband, I know that this really bad thing is going to happen because I learned in the office today, this really bad thing happened, and then it is going to happen, and that this pandemic is going to get really bad. And her husband then turns to their financial services professional and says, "You're a great financial services professional. You manage all our money. Guess what? We think this pandemic is going to get really, really bad. We think there's going to be lockdowns. We don't think people are going to be traveling. You know, can you make sure you take care of us?" If that financial services professional is nearly as good as I would hope they would hire someone to be, they would know, gee, we might not want to own an awful lot of airline stocks right now. We might not want to own an awful lot of hotel companies right now. We might not want to own a whole lot of oil and gas companies right now.
So it spreads.
So these things can spread very, very quickly. And that adds significant layers of difficulty and complexity to an investigation. It makes it much less likely that there would be a guilty verdict. It makes it much less likely that you'd see a civil SEC penalty, because the burdens of showing the passing of that information gets harder and harder and harder. But it doesn't mean that there isn't the concern from the court of public opinion. It doesn't mean that their voters in Georgia and citizens all over the country aren't saying, why is this person focusing on themselves, not us?
And the other aspect of this that we haven't talked about is evidently this was not an isolated incident for the Senator Richard Burr. Robert, you reported in 2018 he sold off nearly $50,000 in shares in a Dutch fertilizer company at the height of its value just weeks before its stock began a 40% decline. Are you alleging that he made that decision once again based on what he knew about how this company would have benefited from U.S. sanctions against Iran, which were then pulled and caused the stock value of the company to go down?
I never allege anything, but you know, I did think that was a newsworthy fact in light of his coronavirus trades, right? This is a very obscure Dutch-based fertilizer company. It's not even traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It's a newsworthy question. How did he come to learn about it, and how is it that he was able to sell right before the prices began to fall, partly because of a Trump administration sanctions action? And you're right, it is part of a pattern of behavior. We also reported that Senator Burr, over the years, while sitting on the health committee and sponsoring health-related legislation, has traded hundreds of thousands of dollars of stock in health-related companies. We also reported that soon after he was reelected, the latest time, he sold his DC townhouse to a lobbyist who had been a donor of his and had business before him at the time. And in that case, you know, a couple of estimates we saw for the value of the property showed that it was at an above market value. It's certainly part of a series of financial transactions that Richard Burr has been involved in while he was a member of the Senate that have raised questions about his ethics.
Tyler.
Yeah, I think that's Robert raises a really important point. Again, sort of backing it away from just Senator Burr, but recognizing that the information that senators learn and their positions as senators, people who can change outcomes, change fortunes of companies and industries, that can be used not just in trading stocks. It can be used in trading other financial instruments. It can be used in their real estate purchases. That value, again, sort of clearly ethics implications can impact their business dealings if they run or engaged in other outside business activities. So while we're focused on just the stock market trading, we have to recognize that members of Congress are in positions where they can essentially turn a profit as a result of their position at the expense of the public in a number of ways, which are not clearly illegal either.
In the last 3.5 years, we have learned a lot about what it has been codified about presidential behavior and what has not. And a lot of the things that we assumed were codified, because that's how presidents acted, were not. And so that allows the current president to do a lot of things that other presidents have chosen not to do, and not because it was against the law. So let me ask you this. You have said, Tyler, that the Stock Act did not go far enough. Should members of Congress, should the president and vice president, should members of the cabinet be allowed to own and trade stocks of any kind at all?
The obvious answer is no. They shouldn't be trading individual securities. They shouldn't have significant outside business interests. They should. In fact, what's really interesting is I work in the financial services industry now. Financial services industry professionals have to pre-clear trades. That means they have to go to their own ethics office. They basically have to say, "I don't know anything." Here, the ethics office then has to determine to make sure that they don't, and then they permit any trades. So I would argue that members of Congress, senior administration officials should not be trading individual companies. They shouldn't be spending the time on it at a minimum, but they also shouldn't be able to take advantage of the information they learn. And if they engage in any financial transactions, they should have to run through an ethics office, which is making sure that they aren't abusing their positions.
Just last month, Robert, you reported that Senator Burr is not just a friend to the healthcare industry, as indicated through his actions in Congress, but he is an investor in that industry. And Politico's Maggie Severns reported on his and his wife's trading of healthcare stocks while introducing bills to repeal the medical device tax and working to repeal Obamacare, and that his investments in healthcare repeatedly overlapped with the work of the Senate Health Help Committee, on which he sits. And he invested in financial institutions regulated by the Senate Finance Committee, on which he sits. And there is more. What should be our reaction to that?
Well, I mean that's up to the individual voter and member of public, right? There could be members of the public who feel totally okay about investors in particular companies or industries boosting those companies in the Senate, right? And there are others who see that as a conflict of interest that may make you wonder if their motivations for their actions as lawmakers are, the betterment of society or to improve their own finances or some mix of both. Certainly, when you see members behaving this way, it does make you wonder about what the motivations for their actions are.
We alluded to the fact that maybe some of this may be retribution, I don't know, but people like Tucker Carlson on Fox News have called for this Republican senator to resign in the face of this. It's being investigated by a Justice Department that wants the case against Michael Flynn dropped. Evidently, they moved the case to the district court in D.C. as opposed to the Southern District of New York because it's a little friendlier to the Trump administration. And we've heard, Tyler, the term shock from other members of Congress about this alleged behavior. Are those genuine expressions, or are they just pro forma expressions of shock in the face of this kind of activity?
It does harken back to scenes from Casablanca. But one of the things I think is really important is there are members of Congress and senators who I think are clearly there for the right reasons. And I think that they are as surprised by Robert's reporting as frankly I was. And I think that they're going to be wanting to get to the bottom of it. I think that we're going to see investigators spend a lot of time trying to get to the bottom of it over the next several months and years.
Tyler Galosh helped write the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. He now works as executive director of the Healthy Markets Association. And Robert Fattorecci, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, investigative reporter for ProPublica, who broke the Richard Burr story. Thank you both. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.